The governor has recently signed a whole host of new gun safety laws. Those cover everything from hate crime involvement to active shooter drills in schools. We'll discuss the impact of those new laws and what they encompass. And October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We look at what progress is being made against a disease that still strikes far too many women. A recent clinical trial by a leading oncologist has paid off. And now it's given women a new drug combination to help their cancer from coming back. And it's Sober October. Heard of it? Are you practicing it? We look at the new Sober Curious movement and whether it's helping people battle addiction or is just another social media trend. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. Just recently, nearly a dozen new gun laws were signed by Governor Gavin Newsom. Those new laws encompassing everything from voter intimidation to hate crime reduction to mental health concerns over active shooter drills. Those laws attack the problem of gun violence from a multitude of different angles. But it remains to be seen whether any of that will make an actual impact. Joining us right now to talk about all of this is Penelope Oliver. She's with the Students Demand Action in California. Penelope, good to see you. And tell me a little bit about this organization you're with.
Thank you so much. So Students Demand Action is a national organization as part of Every Town. And we are committed to having a movement where no one's life is ended by gun violence. We're all about ending gun violence, especially having it be the leading cause of death for children and teens in America. So we mobilize students. We also mobilize moms, but specifically on the student side, on campuses, in communities, on high schools, to get students using their voice, because we are a generation that's been in school shooting drills, that's grown up with this as our normal. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be this way.
Have there been any particular incidents, though, that caused for this organization to be formed?
So many. I mean, there's shootings almost nearly every day that occur, either if it's in the community or at schools. So I wouldn't say there's one specifically, just kind of everything. It's, our new normal.
Yeah. Some of these recently passed gun laws are things that activists have been pushing for really a very long time. One, the Peace Act went into effect immediately after it was signed so that it would protect voters. Can you explain what the Peace Act is?
Yeah, so the Peace Act will create a pathway for voters and election officials to enforce important prohibitions on election intimidation in a state civil court, including presumption that openly carrying a gun around a voting site is illegal intimidation. So this bill specifically addresses the role guns play in threatening democratic processes. Our country is built on the promise of freedom and democracy, and violence intimidation threatens that promise, just like we saw on January 6th. So there's no room or need for lethal weapons in places where we vote.
You know, there's another one, AB, or Assembly Bill 1858. That involves something intended to help kids, active shooter drills, but it might be more about mental health. Can you kind of explain how that weaves together?
Yeah, so under this new law, schools will have guidance for best practices on school shooting drills with age-appropriate resources and staff training tools. One thing a lot of people don't know is that school shooting drills are allowed to, currently, before this law was passed, were allowed to mimic real school shootings using fake blood to make the children and to make youth feel like they're actually in a school shooting. And we've been taught how to hide from a shooter since we were in kindergarten or even preschool. And schools have been scrambling with very little guidance on how to prepare students and staff with threats on school shootings without considering the mental health impacts.
Yeah, is that to suggest though, that when we go through these active shooter drills, that these are some kind of a trigger for kids?
Yes, it is. Again, I'm not an educational expert, but what I can tell you is growing up with these drills, we know what a school shooting's like, and we can understand safety protocols without being walked through the real thing. And we welcome any step towards a trauma-informed approach.
I see. There's another one, Senate Bill 902, SB 902 addresses gun ownership and animal cruelty. So how do those two things come together?
Well, a lot of people use guns to shoot their animals and injure their animals. Gun violence doesn't just affect people. So this bill would definitely help with that intersection. At Everytown, we're all about intersectionality, and we want to protect animals as well.
So, we talk about laws and ways of trying to get a handle on what's going on with firearms, but do you think that these things that we've just talked about, and of course there are others, will have an impact?
Yes, California, we have the strongest gun laws in the country, and we have the lowest rates of gun deaths. It's cause and effect. It's very clear that gun safety legislation works, and we need it on the federal level, we need it on the state level, and it's all about making progress. We're in this position thanks to gun sense champions in the legislature who have listened to gun violence survivors and advocates and students, making us central to the solution.
Well, besides educating all of us about what you do, what other things does your group do? I mean, are you actively lobbying? Are you actively doing something other than, say, appearing on shows like this and talking about some of these laws?
Absolutely. We run divestment. We run lobbying. I lobbied along with other student demand action leaders from all across the state for these bills. So we spoke with lawmakers, shared our lived experience and why it's essential for these bills to get passed. We call in, we write letters, we do rallies, we do press conferences. Any area of mobilization, student demand action is on the ground doing that with our student demand action leaders.
It seems like we have way too many of these things. And even on this program, we have had kids from Saugus High School where there was a shooting. We've had people who were involved in the shooting in Las Vegas outside of Mandalay Bay Hotel. And we've heard their stories. And yet, it seems like it's very hard to kind of get a handle on how to keep guns out of people who have bad intent.
With these laws, we can move a step closer to progress. It's essential for gun safety and common sense gun legislation. At Students Demand Action at Everytown, in no way are we saying you shouldn't have the right to the Second Amendment. We're simply saying you have to use your gun safely and you have to go through training. And again, the safety element of it, the most basic common sense legislation and laws behind it.
And I'm glad you said that because I'm sure there are people watching right now who really care very much about the Second Amendment and are concerned about legislating guns and how that slippery slope sometimes tends to work. Thank you so much for being with us, Penelope, and good luck to your group in continuing to fight that fight. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, about 1 in 8 women in the United States will have to deal with breast cancer in their lifetime. We talked to a UCLA oncologist about the inroads that are being made in fighting the disease. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but for many women, they are already far too aware of this disease. Patients who have battled breast cancer can never quite shake the concern that it might eventually come back. But a recent clinical trial has raised some new hope for some of those patients. And here to talk about that is Dr. Dennis Slaman, chief of the Division of Hematology and Oncology at UCLA, and Terry Boudreau, a two-time breast cancer survivor who participated in that clinical trial at UCLA. And welcome to both of you. Doctor, why don't you tell us a little bit about this trial? And I think it had a name called Natalie.
The trial's name was Natalie. It enrolled 5,100 patients globally from multiple countries to test whether a new drug, a new therapy, could improve the outcomes for patients with a particular subtype of breast cancer, which constitute about 65% of all breast cancers that occur.
Now, I know what certain trials are that involve placebos. One group gets a medication, another one gets something that they think might be a medication. It's not, and you test the two. But what is this kind of a trial?
So this trial, all patients got standard, best available standard therapy. But half the patients got that same therapy plus the new therapy, the new intervention, which was a pill.
Now, how long did it go?
The trial, in terms of taking the pill, lasted 3 years. You took the pill. It is for women who were initially diagnosed with breast cancer, so not women with advanced disease, but early disease.
And what was the outcome of this?
So the outcome showed that we could improve the lack of having a recurrence by as much as 25%, and decrease the chance of any kind of metastasis by even a greater number.
You know, Terry, I've got to believe that this is something that's very hopeful for those who have dealt with breast cancer, and you're nodding your head yes.
Oh, absolutely, because it's the scariest part of breast cancer, actually.
Talk about that for a moment. I mean, you get rid of it, and then it goes back, and it's kind of like, yeah. No, right?
Well, yeah, my first breast cancer was in 1998, and then in 2017, I found another lump, and your first thought is, oh my gosh, it's a recurrence, it's a metastatic, and it's very confusing. And I guess lucky for me, it wasn't. It was a new breast cancer, a new type. So it was scary. The first, huh?
No, go ahead. Just finish up that thought.
I was just saying it's very scary to wonder which breast cancer you have. Is it metastatic? Is it terminal? All that horrible.
Of course. You know, I don't think I've talked to somebody who's been in part of an active trial for a period of 3 years. What was that like?
Oh, actually, it was easier than the chemotherapy. It was pills every day for, I think, like 21 days, and you have a week off, and you have to go every 3 months for blood draws, EKGs, fill out some paperwork. But basically, it wasn't bad at all, and I had really no side effects.
Dr. Slayman, is there another way to prevent breast cancer?
Well, prevention versus treatment are two different things. Obviously, the ideal situation would be to prevent the disease. There are several strategies looking at prevention, but there's nothing that's been perfect yet. We still have more than 200,000 new cases in this country every year and some 40,000 deaths, so there's more to be done.
A lot of people don't realize that splits between men and women.
Yes. The incidence in men is very small, but it does affect men.
So is there a way to protect ourselves?
Well, ideally for women, the idea of screening now has been moved. The guidelines are that women should start screening at age 40 because we've seen a shift into the occurrence of the disease into earlier life.
And for men, what, you know?
For men, any abnormality in the breast should be evaluated. So absolutely. And if a man has a family history of breast cancer that is genetically predisposed, that certainly is an indication for screening.
Am I right that there are different types of breast cancers?
That's exactly right. That's probably the biggest misconceived idea, is that breast cancer is one disease. It's not. It's a spectrum of diseases. It's all cancer. It's all occurring within the breast. But there are different alterations that can cause subtype A versus subtype B versus subtype C, and the therapy should be tailored to the type you have.
So you've had the study for 3 years, you've had good results, and now where do you go from here?
So now the drug has been approved based on the results of the study by the FDA. Yeah. Can we improve these data even more? And the answer is that's what we've been working on. Our own lab, but laboratories around the country and around the world are trying to make this an even bigger improvement than what we've already seen.
I don't think I heard you say the name of the drug.
The drug is called ribociclib, or Kisqali, in terms of some of the advertisements you see. But there's at least two different drugs in this class, three actually, that have been approved. Two of them show this really improvement in early breast cancer that's pretty impressive.
You know, I'm curious, where did you first come up with the idea for approaching it? And what were you thinking about when it was like, oh, we need to do this and maybe do that?
It was research. I started in the laboratory looking at models, cell lines that are growing in the lab, or breast cancers that are growing in experimental mice that tell us that this type of therapy might be impactful in this subtype of the disease. So having seen that data, we tested it first in women with advanced cancer, showed that it was very effective there, and moved to early breast cancer and shows it even more effective there.
I'm gathering, as a researcher, you're always thinking of something new you'd like to look into.
Absolutely.
What are you looking into now?
Well, we're looking at new therapeutic interventions that will give us this kind of result, a satisfying result like we've seen, or even more. So there's always work to do. As I say, the incidence still is there, and it's still something to be done.
Well, would just give some doctor's advice here to everybody out there that when it comes to breast cancer.
Well, the concept of screening is clearly something that women should be aware of. A woman who has a family history should be aware of certainly getting screening. We are seeing this migration to even earlier in terms of in the life of an individual where the cancer can occur. So any abnormality that one feels in a breast should be looked at by a healthcare professional and followed up on.
Dr. Slaman, Terry Boudreau, thank you both very much for joining us here on Fox 11 News in Depth. And coming up next, did you miss Dry July? Are you still looking for a way to evaluate your relationship with alcohol? Well, welcome to, ready for this? Sober October. We'll tell you what that's all about right after the break. Don't go away. Welcome back. You may have heard of Dry January, but have you heard of Sober October? It's more than just a cute phrase. It's an experiment for many people ready to try to cut their alcohol use. Some do it for a month. Some people keep the dry lifestyle going for much longer. Joining us right now, Mike Diamond, a certified addiction recovery expert who has personal experience with addiction himself. He's also the author of A Dose of Positivity, Tools, Techniques, and Strategies to Live Your Life on Your Terms. Boy, that's an awfully good message, isn't it? The book, A Dose of Positivity. Tell us about that.
Well, DOSE stands for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins.
Ah.
And we're always looking to avoid pain and gain pleasure. So the book really is showing you empowering ways to get your dose.
Well, outside of the book, let's talk about this so people that are watching can understand this better, because we seem to be getting more and more opportunities to experiment with things like sobriety.
Yeah. So I think, look, you've got to be curious. And I studied mindfulness. And before I decided to get sober, I was more curious about sobriety. So I was like, I wonder what my life would be like if I was sober. Now, 18 and a half years later, it's a pretty amazing life.
What was life like when you weren't sober?
It was pretty bad. I was drinking, I owned bars, I was, you know, doing cocaine, and I was in the entertainment industry, but the problem was my rituals and routines were very disempowering. So, you know, you work hard and you play hard, but over time, your habits really break you down.
But, you know, often books that are written like this come from personal experience.
Yep.
What is your personal experience you're putting in here and trying to help people understand something that you learned to help yourself?
What I do is I give permission to people to live their best life. I have made mistakes, and I'm very forthcoming in telling people these are the mistakes I made by making disempowering choices. So that gives people permission to not feel ashamed and guilty for making mistakes, because we always carry this guilt and shame.
Right.
And I remove that by being honest about my mistakes and then give them positive tools so they can live a great life.
So is a Dry January or Sober October a tool?
Yeah, and I think it's a great tool because, look, I'm an alcoholic.
I have, and will always be.
Yes, exactly. I have one drink, I like to have 50.
Right.
But some people need a reset. But I'm not against someone that have one drink and two drinks. That's great if that's what you can do. So a Dry January or a Sober October is a great way to reset and recharge yourself.
We talk about trends. Do you think, from whatever research you've been able to do, that there are more and more people that are turning away from alcohol?
Yes, there are. And I think COVID showed people how bad and destructive it can be. Because, look, we all want connection and community. And when COVID hit, a lot of people were alone and drank. And then we came out of COVID and we thought, wow, maybe we need to take some dry time and make some different choices to get healthy again.
But it wasn't that they took the time to drink. Drinks were actually being delivered, just like food. And that was just bringing it to your home. And so what did that do to exacerbate the situation?
Well, it's hard because, look, we alter our mood when we feel stressed and dysregulated. And alcohol is guaranteed. We know we're going to get something from alcohol. So let's say you're depressed and you can't reach out to someone, you're afraid to reach out to someone. What's a guarantee? Alcohol. That's why we go to alcohol or drugs, because we know it's guaranteed and it's a different relationship. We don't get rejected by alcohol. We don't get rejected by drugs, but we can get rejected by people.
So we talk about giving people permission to do something, and then we give them tools like Sober October.
Yep.
And so they put on the brakes for a little bit, but then do they go back?
A lot of people do go back, and sometimes they go back harder. So, look, dry months are fantastic But like anything, you've got to keep up the habits to live a better life. So it can't just be, oh, I'm gonna, and here's another thing. A lot of people get dry or go to a rehab for a month and then they fatten up for another run.
I think that's the point. People get addicted to alcohol. It's not just a matter of being habituated. So you get addicted, you get away from it, you get back to it, you get away. Isn't that a yo-yo?
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to. The first thing is self-awareness. You have to ask yourself why you're making this choice. Sit with yourself, sit with your feelings, don't drink your feelings, don't scroll your feelings, don't run from your feelings, sit in your feelings and say, okay, why am I making this choice? Because it's the desired result, right?
Right.
Avoid pain, gain pleasure.
But not everybody drinks.
No.
I mean, we have recreational drugs here.
Yeah.
THC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, same thing?
100%. 100%. It's using something to alter our mood to feel better.
Well, okay, so what do we recommend to people with regard to once you put on the brake, to keep the brake on?
I would recommend this. The first thing you need to do, under stress, we all need to breathe to regulate our emotions.
So that's your meditation?
Meditation, some kind of breath work. Slow yourself down. Then in the morning, instead of grabbing your phone or drinking your coffee, write down how you feel. Start to process these emotions. Become aware of your feelings.
You have to understand yourself.
If you don't understand yourself, you don't understand anything.
That's right? True. So, you know, what about people who decide to call it quits and then they have problems negotiating the various pitfalls of sobriety?
There's two important things. You need a mentor and you need a community.
So it's a team effort.
Always a team effort. Always a team effort. What do they say? It takes a village to make a champion?
Yeah, it takes a village. But I mean, you know, so you have to have a team. You have to have
100%.
How did you pick your team?
I went to someone else that had a long-term, was 15 years sober, and I sat with them, and I said, I think I need to take some time away from drinking and drugs. I went to a 12-step meeting. It worked for me, and I never looked back. But I know other people. There's some great online communities. You can go online. You can look up sober curious movements. There's yoga. There's meditation now. There's a lot of different things, not just the AA community.
All right. Let's take a deep breath. Fox 11 News continues right after this break. Don't go away. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.